Congresswoman Gabby, as I've been directed, welcome to Chicago. Welcome to the City Club. This is the City Club of Chicago. These are the people that make this city work, and these are the people who come together. They're in business, they're in philanthropy, they're in academics, they're all civic leaders. They're people who care about Chicago. We obviously care about the problem that we see in day in and day out, just like other cities, but it is a problem here in Chicago with gun violence, and we appreciate what you're doing nationwide, and look forward to hearing more. So this is City Club. We are going to welcome you up to this stage, and what I'd like to do as we get started is please ask Kim and Esther to join us on the stage, and we'll take our seats, and then we'll get started with some remarks. So please, if we could, we'll get started, and please welcome Congresswoman Gabby Giffords.
Gabby Giffords. I'm from Tucson, Arizona. January 8th, 2011, changed my life forever. I was a congresswoman. I was shot in my head while meeting with my constituents. I couldn't walk. I couldn't talk. I watched gun violence destroyed too many lives. After the shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School, I've said, enough is enough. I founded a group called Giffords. We're on a mission to end gun violence.
Thank you, Gabby. We're going to have a conversation, and let's make sure those mics are working.
Hello?
All right. Tell us, what makes Giffords so special?
Shall I start?
Yes.
Please.
Hi, everyone. My name's Esther. I'm the litigation director with Giffords Law Center, and thanks so much for having us today. Giffords special. Well, I think it's hard to start anywhere else than Gabby Giffords herself, who I think is an inspirational leader and as well as a powerful advocate for this cause. It's really a privilege to get to work with her every day, and I think her experience as a survivor of gun violence places us in a unique place advocating against gun violence. But from my perspective, I guess, as an attorney, I would say that I think that we have a really special sort of multi-dimensional approach to gun violence. We are a full-service shop when it comes to advocating to reduce gun violence. And by that I mean, we are researching what laws are going to be effective. We're drafting those laws. We're advocating across the country to get those laws passed. And then my team of litigators are working to defend those laws. We're looking to sue the gun industry to create accountability for practices that are harming our communities. So we're really looking at this holistically. And I think that that's unique to a gun violence prevention organization and something that I'm really proud of.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kim Kaiser. I'm the Midwest Regional Development Director for Giffords, and I get to do fun things like this all the time. Thank you so much for being here. To really echo what Esther said, Giffords is a bit of a one-stop shop. So we have the Law Center, and then we have Giffords, which is the umbrella name for the organization, but that is where our advocacy and lobbying lies. And so we started lobbying Congress and have moved towards working with state legislatures across the country. We also have wonderful partners here in the room that do that as well. And then we also have what's called Gifford's PAC, and that's really focused on electing gun violence prevention champions into elected office up and down the ballot. And we like to brag that Gifford's is special because not only is it founded by a gun owner and a gun violence survivor, but they really have chosen to leverage that. I know that Gifford's, like any of the staff members you meet, we just can't speak enough good into the world about Gabby. After her experience, she could have decided to live a quiet life. But she shows
up. No way, Jose.
Yep. She shows up with grit and determination every day and truly sets the culture. And she also reminds us and teaches us that we work with whoever is willing to work with us.
Oh, 90 people.
Yes. So when Gifford's started, it was founded by Gabby and her husband, veteran, astronaut, and now U.S. Senator Mark Kelly, and a couple of her former congressional staff, Peter and Pia. And from there, it has grown into a 90-person staff where our hubs are in New York, in D.C., and in San Francisco. And we've got a large hub in San Francisco because of the Gifford's Law Center. And we're constantly expanding.
I'll take that opportunity to make a plug for Chicago. We hope you'll do more in Chicago.
Yes.
Gabby, could you tell us what are your days like these days?
I'm so busy. A lot of Zoom call. Work, work, work. Yoga twice a week. French horn. Spanish lessons. Riding my bike. The gym. A lot of travel. And I'm getting better. I'm getting better.
Great.
And just to really just sing Gabby's praises, Gifford's, it has Gabby on the road about 200 stops a year. And it's one of my favorite lines, but I will say I get fussy if I'm out of my routine for more than 3 days. And again, that's because Gabby believes in grit and determination and doing whatever she can and really sets the tone for the organization.
Well, the work is so important. As I said, in Chicago, we have gun violence issues. Big cities everywhere have major issues. What's your next priority? Tell us what you're working on actively these days, these weeks, and what's next in your immediate work.
Well, I'll start from my litigator perspective. One thing that's been happening over the last few years that my colleagues on the legislative side have been pushing forward is spaces to create accountability for the gun industry. I think you need a little bit of background here. In 2005, a federal immunity law was passed that created unprecedented immunity for the gun industry. Basically, they're really hard to sue. And this is challenging because our legal system uses the courts as a way to basically shift behavior when people are doing things that aren't necessarily technically unlawful based on some particular law, but that are clearly and obviously irresponsible and hurting people. That's how our system is set up. It's an important tool that we have in our communities to create accountability. Think about environmental issues, think about tobacco, think about a lot of different things that have been hurting our communities and that litigation helped solve. Because of this immunity law, it was really hard to get at the gun industry. That immunity law still stands, but there is a narrow exception that exists for particular types of state laws. And in the last few years, my colleagues on the legislative side have been drafting laws to open up this exception. And now my team of litigators are looking to leverage these laws in order to create that accountability. So really what we have coming are lawsuits. We settled a lawsuit about a week ago. We partnered with the City of Philadelphia and a law firm that offered their services pro bono to sue two of the largest ghost gun dealers in the country. We settled it last week for $1.3 million and really extensive injunctive relief. That means they can't sell in Philadelphia and in much of Pennsylvania for a long while to come. Sorry, interrupted your applause, but it's very much appreciated. So that's what's on my to-do list in the next few months.
D.C. Shreveport.
I'm sorry?
Shreveport. Yimi.
Oh, yeah. Good call. So another thing that's happening on our to-do list, I was actually watching...
It sounds like the to-do list is expanding as your boss is suggesting.
She's reminded me of what's already on it. So this year, the Supreme Court heard a really important Second Amendment case. It's a case in which a federal law that prevents people subject to domestic violence restraining orders from possessing guns was challenged under the Second Amendment, and the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers Texas and other parts of the South, actually struck down this federal law that was passed with VAWA amendments. We filed an amicus brief in the fall arguing that the court needs to be careful with how it interprets the Second Amendment, because this could have really broad implications for a large number of federal laws that prevent people who are dangerous with guns from having them. And the court is said to issue a decision any day now. I was just watching the feed this morning. The Supreme Court issued two decisions, but not this one. But we're expecting that any day. And I think that for those sort of not tuned in on the nuances of the Second Amendment law, like I am every single day, all day, there was a major shift that happened about 2 years ago in the state of Second Amendment jurisprudence, where we shifted from an understanding of the Second Amendment in the way that many, many other constitutional rights are considered, to a place where we're looking at history to understand what the scope of the Second Amendment is. This is really challenging. We live in a world that is very different from what it looked like in 1791 or even in 1868 when the Reconstruction Amendments were passed. And so when lower courts have been considering these challenges, they've been really confused with how to do it. I think that there's been a lot of sort of misinterpretation of history, interpreting silences in history, which is a really complicated, illogical thing to do. I think folks need to be really aware of what the Supreme Court is doing, and the reasoning that goes behind this decision is going to be hugely impactful for what laws are going to survive constitutional challenges going forward.
And that's also just one arm of the organization. And also shout out to Esther for being just one brilliant team member in Giffords. And then if you look at the other arms of the organization, one thing that we're particularly proud of is the Giffords Center for Violence Intervention. We sort of answered the call to be a support system for the countless community organizations that have existed for decades doing that on the ground work. And so we focus on being a hub for resources, but also connecting those organizations to the pathways in receiving the CBI funding that we can see from the government. And then also, it sounds silly, but one of the things on our to-do list is getting gun violence prevention champions elected. And again, we've got great partners here in the room doing that as well.
Great. So just in hearing some of that, there are so many great organizations doing so much good. How are you able to collaborate, especially maybe if we stick or go back to some of the legal fights? You're not the only ones out there. Everyone, it seems like a number of folks are all heading in the right direction. How are you able to collaborate? You're certainly not competing, right, because you're looking for the same outcomes. And you have this incredible asset in Gabby, right, and being able to share the message. How are you able to work with other organizations to help them further the mission and just collaborate all together?
Yeah, no, we are absolutely working collaboratively with other organizations. This is, we're all looking for the same result, like you said. This is not a thing where no one wins if gun violence continues, right? Like, there's one mission here. I'll give you an example of one area where my team in particular has collaborated a lot with other gun violence prevention organizations. So in the wake of this the Second Amendment decision that I was mentioning earlier, where the state of Second Amendment law changed dramatically, there were a huge number of challenges under the Second Amendment that were filed in the lower courts. This was somewhat expected once the decision dropped, but truly an unprecedented number of cases across the country flooding the courts. And sort of our role as both, scholars in the Second Amendment and as advocates for a narrow interpretation of the Second Amendment meant that we really wanted, especially early considerations of this new test, to have our influence, to have our perspective, to have the experts, before the court so that they could take that into consideration. But the volume was so high that, given our small team, there are four of us working on amicus briefs, we're talking about hundreds of cases. So we decided to partner with some of the other national gun violence prevention organizations to expand our reach, jointly filing briefs where we knew that we were aligned in our position, and we could really put the force of all of those organizations behind what we were saying, rather than trying to all put in briefs that were relatively redundant, because we all share that perspective, in fewer cases. And we were able to, by an order of magnitude, increase the number of briefs we filed in a single year doing that collaboration.
And Kim, in that same spirit, could you talk about what you and Giffords are doing to help lift up other organizations that also have similar missions that come to you or that you've identified as potential partners along the way?
Absolutely. And so Giffords has started off as more of a national organization, and so we look to partners in states to really guide us. And so we've got a couple in the room, right? Crown is a wonderful partner to Giffords. GPAC is a wonderful partner to Giffords. University of Chicago Medicine is a wonderful partner to Giffords. And so we really take cues from them. And so we were actually lucky enough to meet with Franklin from UChicago Med to talk about their work, and their partnership with the community violence intervention at Giffords, but then also how we continue to be more present in not only the state of Illinois, but in the Great Lakes region. And then with GPAC, we also do a lot of election work as well.
Great. Could you talk about, you mentioned obviously Chicago and Illinois. I'd like to get back into that in a couple minutes, but perhaps talk about some other states. Maybe we start with what states are doing things right. Where should we be looking, to best practices, efforts that other states are making that perhaps Illinois can learn from?
You okay if I take this one, Esther?
Please.
So as a native Michigander, I'm sure it will come as no surprise that I will talk about Michigan for a moment. But we are really lucky. Michigan faced just some unfortunate events where they had two school mass shootings in 14 months. And because of their Democratic trifecta there, so they had the State House, the State Senate, and the governor, their elected officials are really able to answer the call on gun violence prevention. And some of their laws were enacted this year, actually, February
13th. Oh, bald head.
So this is one of my favorite stories of Gabby's. So Gabby was also a very active member of this lobbying effort. And so Gabby met with the Speaker of the Michigan House. His name is Joe Tate, very kind man,
ex-football player.
Yep, pro football player. And the Michigan Senate was moving. They were really getting stuff done. And the Speaker was trying to find the timing of the bills to move through the State House. And Gabby...
Tissue.
Yeah, so at that point, Gabby kind of put him in a hot seat and was like, no, you'll do it now. And he's starting to sweat a little. And so Gabby comes over and, like, takes a tissue. And if I'm remembering, you've, like, actually blotted his head. And what I love most is, like, obviously Gabby is just a formidable opponent, but I have friends in the state legislature there, and I went back, and I was like, can any of you tell me about this meeting? And they were like, oh, yeah, no, that happened. Like, Gabby had them. But also, we are so grateful, right, because friends have to be able to be honest with each other, right, and even if that means speaking hard truths to one another, and again, Michigan really answered that call. What's unfortunate is the day that those laws were enacted, and one of them that is very special to me, which is a safe storage mandate. And so if there is a minor present in the home and you do not store safely, it is a felony. On the day that that happened, a little girl, I believe she was in Flint, was harmed by a self-inflicted gunshot wound because of an unsecured gun. But again, Michigan, right, they are answering the call, and they continue to do so. And we're really grateful. And again, Midwest is best. And so just lucky to shine some light on the Midwest.
As the Midwest director, you have to say that, right?
It's the best part of the job.
Are things getting better?
Better.
I mean, last year we passed the first major federal legislation with regard to gun violence in 10 years. So, it feels like Congress isn't moving, and we can't predict the future, but things happened. And my colleagues on the federal legislative side were instrumental in that happening. So, yes, I think there's a lot of opportunity. We're seeing in polling that more and more people are seeing gun violence as an issue that they're going to vote on. I think that there's movement. I think that people are paying attention, and people see that this is an important issue because it's affecting all of our lives.
Yeah.
Sure. And it's... Thank you for helping make things better. Certainly a ways to go. But, you know, Chicago wants to be a part of that, right? From all the folks in the room that are involved in this work, that's proof. And there's so much more that's happening around here. You mentioned the Crown School. You mentioned, you know, UChicago Health.
GPAC.
Could you dive a little bit deeper into what's going on in Chicago, maybe in comparison to some other cities, maybe some lessons that others could take from what we're doing? Could you dive a little bit deeper into those partnerships here in Chicago, and perhaps legally or otherwise as well? What's going on here? What do you see here in Chicago that might be a little different? I'd love to hear what's going on here better than others, but maybe there's something we can work on.
Yeah. So just to zoom out to the state of Illinois, Illinois has the fourth best set of gun violence prevention laws in the country, right? You follow California, I believe New Jersey and Connecticut, and most recently one of the best laws, or like one of the ones that we celebrate a lot, is the ban of assault weapons. And so it is not that Chicago or Illinois isn't doing the work. You very much are, and thank you so much, because there are so many people in this room that touch that. It is the reality that we have poor gun laws and gun violence prevention in the states surrounding. And so the city of Chicago sees a lot of trafficking, right? And so there's work being done there. Like, we're lucky that the ATF is mindful in that way. We're talking about straw purchasing and how to crack down on that. But what Chicago does well is you listen to one another, right? Like, in just getting to speak with some of you, you talk about how these partnerships are interconnected, and you really talk about the community wraparound. And so, like, I got a table here of folks that are working on victim access or victim rights bills. And we can't do that, right? Like, as Giffords, we do so much and we support everything that we can. But at the end of the day, we are relying on our community programs to do that work.
Yeah, I mean, I think trafficking is a huge issue. When you talk about communities like Chicago, this is a problem in New York, this is a problem in California, where California has really strong gun laws, but guns are coming in from other places. This trafficking is also an issue that the gun industry is sort of leveraging, right? I'm like Gabby, I'm also from Tucson. And something that we see sort of along the southern border is a huge concentration of gun dealerships selling and marketing firearms to be trafficked across the border. So in that way, the American gun industry is also sourcing guns for cartels. And the government of Mexico actually filed a lawsuit about this issue. But this is a problem that we're seeing in a lot of states and cities that are taking bold action. And that's why I think an organization like Giffords is so valuable, because we're looking at this sort of holistically and seeing where the hotspots are, where guns are moving, and understanding that, you know, working with communities where they are pushing things forward and understanding where movement needs to happen to protect those communities as well. So it's really sort of looking at it holistically. We can't solve the gun violence prevention problem without looking at the country as a whole.
Yeah. Florida.
Oh, yeah. So part of the work with Giffords is we have states initiative programs, right, because we do see the importance of the community violence work that's happening. And so Giffords, Florida, was our first state. That happened in 2022.
Bus tour.
Gabby went on two bus tours.
Sounds bumpy.
And part of that
Parkland
work.
Parkland shooting.
Yeah.
Parkland, yep.
Yeah. We have folks on staff from all walks of life, but on the development team, my team, we actually have a teammate who is from Parkland and was touched by that. And so we are just grateful for her work. But then also our state director in Florida, Sammy, she's phenomenal. And that bus tour also had a special focus on the Hispanic population, because we have seen at Giffords that the Hispanic communities are seeing just an uptick in gun violence in ways that other communities simply are not. But then, like I said, Florida was our first, and we're currently expanding into six. And so we have Texas. We are currently looking at expanding into Arizona and Michigan, and then Colorado and California.
Great. You mentioned Parkland. I've met a number of advocates that were involved, young people. Just talking with them, it's absolutely incredible. To be able to take such a horrible experience, especially at a young age, and turn it into progress. Yeah. Grapple with it, deal with it, and somehow get over that or continue to deal with it and use it to do good. Something that you're doing, you didn't need to. Like you said, Kim, I mean, you could have had a quiet life. You know, you could have moved on.
No way, Jose.
Not happening. Not happening, huh? You're still on the road.
In the road, Jack.
So, yeah, thank you again for that. The Parkland, and I'd love to invite them to come here to City Club, because if anyone, I know a number of you have likely met some of these young folks and heard firsthand of their own experiences. So thank you for mentioning that. It's another horrible tragedy that perhaps...
Kids.
They're kids.
Kids.
So could you talk a little more about, and they're kids, and imagine that happening and being afraid for the rest of your life. How about mental health in regards to the trauma that occurs from all of this? I mean, there's so many angles we could take on all of these, everything that falls under the umbrella of gun violence, but how about trauma and mental health? And are you doing any work in that, and are you seeing any good efforts out there that can be lifted up a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think having Gabby as a leader, as I was saying, you know, it's a constant reminder to center survivor experiences. People who have these experiences are the best people to ask what they need, right? What is going to be helpful to prevent the experiences that they have? What's going to be helpful for them to grow, to heal, to move forward, to be advocates? So I think that's a huge part of our work. And you know, having Gabby reminds us of that every single day. We work closely with the kids from March for Our Lives, which are an important youth voice. I think it's important to remember that because this issue touches all of us, we need to be bringing everyone into the conversation. And I think those voices are an important piece of that. One thing that my team is doing is working on creating greater access to victim compensation funds. So both at the state and federal level, there's funds available to folks who have experienced gun violence, but the bureaucratic process is oftentimes very complex. The timing to file these petitions is usually very short considering the extreme trauma that people have survived. And so working with local organizations who are trying to create access to these and sort of providing broader resources is something that we think is really, really important. Of course, community violence intervention is a really important tool to center survivors, to understand the lived experiences of people who are experiencing gun violence at the highest levels, and getting their feedback and input in how to reduce gun violence in their communities is a huge piece of this work and something that I think we're uniquely positioned as a national organization to provide.
Great. And we've been asking, as we elevate the conversation, especially around mental health, we've been asking various speakers. We had the Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, from the U.S. He's amazing. He was here and spoke at City Club about mental health in teens. And since we've had him, I've been encouraged to just ask every speaker that we've had here, how do you deal with your own mental health? You know, you all are dealing with very difficult issues. Gabby, a whole different scenario for you. You experienced trauma. You have talked about how all the fun things you do in life, and I imagine that's partially how you deal with the trauma and the mental health. Could any one of you chime in on how you deal with your own mental health as you're trying to see this work? You're seeing the worst of society. You're also seeing the best of society. That's not easy. How are you all doing? And any tips that you can share along the way? We have so many first responders. We have medical professionals. We have people that see this all day in and day out, and it's not easy, right?
Go ahead, Kim.
So I will say one of the best things that I can do personally for my mental health is be open about it. Obviously, there is such a stigma around mental health, but when I'm able to say, you know, to colleagues, even to my supervisors, like, hey, I am not doing well and I need support, that's when they can answer the call, because ultimately they can't read my mind. And that also kind of signals to them that I am trying to do the work for myself. I will say Giffords is really investing in that. We have trauma trainings for all staff, not just for how we deal with our own trauma, but when we interact with folks in the world who have traumas of their own, just to be mindful and present and also try to not wash it away. I think that's a pretty normal response, is when someone comes to you with something heavy, to say like, oh, but you're great, like, oh, but it's going to be okay, when in reality, like, some people just need you to sit there with them, just to sit and let them feel it, because we need to sit in it, but we can't live there. So that's what's honestly been best for me.
I think it's a really important question. Something that, you know, I'll start more general and then maybe talk a bit more about myself, but I think that one of the big challenges with working in this space is that, and we see this a lot with community violence intervention groups, because they're so under-resourced, burnout is a huge problem. And something that we talk about, and that I talk about with my colleagues on the community violence intervention team, is like, these are professionals. We need to be paying them like professionals. We need to be giving them time off like professionals. If you ask people to be martyrs in this work, they can't do it forever, right? People are going to be lost in the mix, and their trauma is going to take over, and we're going to be losing more and more people to the experience of gun violence. They're not going to be moving this mission forward. And so I think it's really important to remember that, you know, giving people the adequate resources to take that time away, to be able to take care of their families, is a huge step in giving them the space to protect themselves in the way that they most need to. I know that with my team, we have 9 attorneys on the litigation team. You know, part of our work is getting into those details, talking to people who have experienced their trauma, asking them follow-up questions so that we can understand their experience so that we can tell a court about it. And that can be really challenging. And what I always encourage the team to do is to basically do what Kim was saying, you know, let me know when you need that time away, trying to create space for folks to do what they need to take care of themselves. For me, that's time with my family. Traveling with my family, that's something that I'd done always with my parents, with my brother, with my husband. And that allows me to be in a different world for a minute and then come back to it fresh, come back to it excited to do this work. But, you know, I think that that's really a personal thing. And so giving everyone the space to advocate for themselves, you know, without judgment and without consequences is really an important thing.
Oh, every day, bike, 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 every day. Bike, bike, bike.
So Gabby rides a recumbent trike, and she actually founded an organization, Friends of Aphasia, with her speech therapist, Fabby. And they have every year, it's called Tour de Tucson. And so it's got a few different distance races, right? Yeah. And we've actually got some friends here in the room that I think are going to join her, so it'll be fun.
Bike, bike, bike. I rode an electric scooter here today. It wasn't quite biking, but it was close enough. I was watching a few videos just in prepping for today. I hear you like to sing. So what song are you singing lately?
The sun will come out tomorrow, so you gotta hang on till tomorrow. Come with me tomorrow, tomorrow. I love ya tomorrow. It always a day away.
You heard that here, folks, at the City Club of Chicago. We're always focused on tomorrow and the sun, especially in Chicago. We love it. That was amazing. Thank you. All right. We do have some questions. I have a whole host of questions from the audience. We're not going to be able to get to all of them, but I'd like to stick for a moment on mental health. NAMI Chicago is here. Tamara is with them. Supporters of gun access often blame mental illness for gun violence. Data shows that with the exception of gun-related suicides, mental distress is much more often the result of gun violence instead of the cause. How can we work collectively to change that narrative? A very easy one.
Well, I was just going to speak a little bit about sort of the research that we have. Obviously, passing gun laws does not solve mental health issues in and of itself. I was talking about resources for survivors. I think that that's an important piece when we're talking about gun violence causing mental health issues. But, you know, I feel like people say this a lot. Well, you know, okay, if the person, you know, is mentally ill and wants to commit violence, what does, you know, a gun law going to, you know, how is that going to help? And the reality is the research shows that when people don't have ready access to firearms, they aren't able to commit as much violence against other people and against themselves. And so a lot of the laws that we're talking about really sort of interrupt that access. They make it more difficult for people to access firearms when they're going through a crisis. It makes it so that, you know, and this is particularly important with suicide, which is 2/3 of the gun deaths in this country. If you have to wait 3 days to get a gun, the suicidal ideations most likely will have passed. Maybe you've gone and gotten help elsewhere. And so when we create these sort of breaks in people's access to firearms, we are actually also creating breaks in their access to violence. These laws are impactful for those things. And so while, you know, slowing that person's access to the firearm doesn't in and of itself, you know, get them the help that they need, it gives them the time to get the help that they need to help themselves, right? Guns are incredibly lethal and they're very fast. So, you know, I think that these laws are helpful for that. And we need to be thinking about it in that way. And the research can be really helpful in understanding what's going to be impactful.
So Jeffrey Emmerich asks, what are the prospects, and I think this fits right in with some of your comments about changing laws, but what are the prospects for new gun control measures if the House changes parties in 2025? So looking a little bit ahead to tomorrow. If the parties change in 2025, what are the prospects for new measures?
Well, I mean, I think that we're doing a lot of advocacy in making this an important issue for voters for the fall. So I'm hopeful that that doesn't come to pass, right? More and more people are saying that this is an issue that they're going to vote on. They want to understand what their candidates are saying on gun violence, what they're going to do about gun violence. And that's something new, and I think it's a result of the advocacy that, you know, my colleagues are doing across the country. So that's an important piece, and you know, obviously we can't predict the future. If that happens, it's going to make it more challenging, but that's only on the federal level. And the reality is that a lot of gun laws exist on the state and local level, and that's something that we're going to continue to push for. And just because federal legislation maybe feels more challenging or more off in the distance, that doesn't mean that local legislation and statewide legislation can't be impactful. And I think that that's where we'll focus our energies. And, you know, that's something that folks here can talk to their communities about, talk to your legislators. Those are the people that you can actually pick up and, you know, call on the phone, right? It's harder to get a hold of your federal representative than it is of your state or local representative. So that's really where I'd put my energy.
Screenport.
The Supreme Court.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, the Supreme Court.
Phoenix. Law.
Oh, the Arizona Supreme Court. Yeah. Yeah. Pay attention to who appoints or elects the judges in your state Supreme Courts. They make a huge difference in your everyday lives. And obviously, Arizona took a wrong turn, a nonsensically wrong turn. But I think that we like to forget, you know, what local judges and state, you know, think about your community and who are the people that you have access to. Understanding those candidates is really important.
Thank you for that reminder, Gabby. We try to gather, as I mentioned, those sorts of people in this room so we all can better understand who's making decisions. In fact, for the first time in the 120-year history of City Club, we had Illinois' entire Supreme Court here just a month ago. And it was really incredible to see them interact with hundreds of civic leaders who didn't know otherwise what the court system really did and didn't know who they saw names on ballots, and it's so important to elevate those folks and understand who we're electing to these offices that have real lasting impact. Thank you for that reminder. We've got just a couple of minutes left and two or three questions. Rihanna Jimenez from Moms Demand Action is asking, are you here? Could you raise your hand? Okay, thank you. And I'm hoping I'm saying your name correctly. Thank you. What role do you feel police play in supporting gun violence survivors?
Well, thank you for your work. I didn't actually see where you are, but thank you for your work with Moms Demand Action. It's a great organization, and we partner with them regularly. So I think that what's important to remember when it comes to police is that when gun violence is high in a community, police are also affected. This is a symbiotic relationship, and we work closely with police organizations to understand what resources they need to reduce gun violence and to understand that interaction as well. Because at the end of the day, you know, that interaction can also be violent in every direction. Kim, I don't know if you wanted to speak. Do you have more information about sort of maybe what the CVI team is doing with that?
Yeah, so there is actually a webinar on the Giffords YouTube. It's about policing and gun violence prevention, right? And so it's, as Esther mentioned, it's about holding all parts of that in our brains and also holding all parts of that accountable. Because as Esther said, like that violence can go in any direction. And so while it is important to work with our police departments, it is also important to uplift maybe when they have misstepped or quite frankly done something wrong. And I do think that organizations like Giffords and like Moms have done a good job at that as well. And also just a personal thank you to Moms. When I moved here to Chicago, they were one of the first orgs to reach out and to partner, and they were, well, outside of GPAC, but they were really lovely.
Just on the accountability point, I just want to mention that this is an area where we've been exploring more in our amicus work, is arguing for a narrower interpretation of qualified immunity, so that, you know, we can create accountability where there needs to be accountability and sort of move those relationships forward. Because if there isn't trust, there's going to be more violence.
You set me up here. Could we stick with accountability from a different perspective now?
Absolutely.
Ariana Schemmel, great handwriting. I'm just not sure if I'm reading it properly. I'm sorry. Alicia. Okay. Thank you, Alicia, from Everytown Survivor Network. I can read that for sure. Regarding the importance of accountability, what can we do to hold shooters accountable? Our homicide clearance rates are very low. We only arrest someone in 18.6% of gun homicides. How can we hold shooters accountable?
Man, woman.
Yeah, domestic violence is a huge problem in terms of homicides. I rarely have statistics in my brain, but a woman in a domestic violence situation is 5 times more likely to die if there's a gun in the home. That's an extreme statistic, and this is the issue that's coming up before the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And so in those situations, removing the gun from the home can be really helpful in reducing violence. So that's a really important piece. Thanks for flagging that, Gabby. I think another piece that I would highlight is gun trafficking, and in particular ghost guns. So when we have ghost guns are basically made at home firearms that are not serialized. And so unserialized firearms make it really difficult to trace that gun back to its original purchaser. And in that way, it makes it more difficult to figure out, you know, how that gun got into the hands of someone who's committing a crime with it. And so, you know, forcing ghost gun companies to stop their sales, putting them, you know, above board, basically, serialize your guns. If you want to sell guns, serialize them. Make sure you're, you know, running background checks on the people that are buying them. Selling guns to people over the internet that they can easily assemble at home is irresponsible and is causing gun violence. And you know, forcing people to come into the area where we have laws by serializing their firearms is a first step to creating accountability as well.
Okay, and Kathy Gregg, you must be a regular City Club attendee. There you are, Kathy, because this is good. As we close out a bit, and you have touched on this again, especially by talking about interacting with your local elected officials, right? But what's the most? Kathy's asking, what's the most effective action any of us can take to promote gun safety locally and nationally? Remember, you have this room of incredible civic leaders. What can we all go back to our museums, our companies, our schools, and actually do on our end?
This is one of my favorite questions because it is a vague and simple answer, but it's to simply have more conversations with one another. I think that we can all feel the impacts of having a pretty divided society, and you know, it feels divisive in many different ways, intersections. And so to approach the conversations about gun safety, safe storage with one another without judgment and assumption, and that also might mean approaching gun owners in a different way. I'm from Michigan. I'm from Northern Michigan. It's very conservative. I'm actually from a Second Amendment county, which means that law enforcement will not uphold gun safety legislation there. And that's a real burden. I feel that when I go home. But most of my family members are gun owners. And most of the kids that I went to school with and now our parents are gun owners. And so when I go home, and especially since I started working for Gabby and for Giffords, I approach this as like, hey, talk to me about your safe storage. Or how have you been talking to your kids about the severity of owning a gun? Because at best, it is a tool, right? We know, we have hunters, right? We have people who use guns as a tool for their livelihood. And at worst, it's a life ruiner, right? It's a life ender. And then also just kind of reflecting on your own lives and the complexity that they have and how you can move through them, right? So maybe you are someone who is like, I know how to write a speech and I can go with moms to the state house or to the state senate and I can really craft talking points for people, right? Maybe that's you. Or maybe you are someone who does not feel comfortable in front of cameras or really just speaking to folks. Can you provide support, right? Can you drive people? Can you provide a listening ear? Maybe you're someone that has mental health resources and can connect survivors and the folks doing that frontline work with that mental health support that we've been talking about. But Esther, do you have anything you want to add?
I would add that, you know, if you are a gun owner yourself, like Gabby is, we have a network of gun owners who are for these common sense solutions. I think that, you know, the idea that gun owners exist on one end of the spectrum and that all of us here exist on the other end of the spectrum is false. And I think we need to bring those people into the conversation because there are impactful things that we can do with working with gun owners like Gabby. And so if you know someone who's interested in joining our Gun Owners for Safety network and, you know, advocating on behalf of laws that gun owners mostly agree with, yeah. That can have a huge impact on whether these laws get passed at the state and the local level. Because I think that there is this perception of a dichotomy that actually doesn't exist in reality. I think that most gun owners are actually for a lot of the measures that we advocate for. And so bringing them into our network is really helpful.
How can they do that? I think we have an Amanda. I think we have QR codes or something. So can you mention maybe how to bring this group together to be able to understand your priorities and do what they can to help?
Absolutely. But first, just like a huge thank you to City Club and specifically Amanda, who has been such a beautiful human to work with. So you'll see at your table there is a QR code to sign up. That is just a general sign-up list. That doesn't lead you anywhere specifically except to my inbox. And so if you put in your information at the bottom, there's a blurb or there's a space to put a blurb. You know, you can tell if you'd like to share something with Gabby or with the organization, you can put what you're interested in. So if you are a gun owner who wants to get connected to our Gun Owners for Safety Coalition, I will help you do that. If you are someone that wants to keep updated or get updates on the Law Center, I will connect you there. That would be wonderful. We would love that.
Okay. Great. Gabby, do you have any words you'd like to share to close us out?
Thank you.
Of course. It's an honor to share this podium with you.
Thank you. Our lives can change so quickly. Mine did when I was shot. But I never gave up hope. I chose to make a new start. To move ahead, to not look back. I'm relearning so many things. How to walk, how to talk. And I'm fighting to make the country safer. It can be so difficult. Losses hurt. Setbacks are hard, but I tell myself, move ahead. I'm finding joy in small things, riding my bike, playing the French horn,
going to the gym, laughing with friends, the small things add up. We are living challenging times. We're up for the challenge. My own recovery has taken years. Many, many, many people have helped me along the way, and I learned so much. I learned that people care for each other and work together. Progress is possible. A better world is possible. But change doesn't happen overnight, and we can't do it alone. Join me. Let's move ahead together. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for everything you're doing. Thank you for sharing it with City Club. It's so amazing to have you here. Thank you. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Esther. This has been an absolute highlight in the City Club's amazing lineup of programs. Thank you for all you're doing. We're so happy you're here. We're so happy you're making all these great efforts. We welcome you back anytime to Chicago and certainly anytime to City Club. You're all welcome back for all of our future programs. Please have a great day. Once again, thank you, Gabby Giffords, and your team.
Thank you.
Thanks.